Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 441 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week?
Doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. That is the truth. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here at the mecca of British boxing, the home, the spiritual home of British boxing, as they say, the York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. It was live on BT Sport, aka TNT Sport these days. Let's start with the main event. We're going to start with the main event here. Chris Bulk, he was a big favourite going in. He's now 13-2. He was TKO'd in six rounds by Ashley Lane, who's now 18-10 with two draws, an unlikely outcome there, the TKO in round six. He was just bang up for it, Ashley Lane. I mean, I don't know if Chris Bulk overlooked him or what. I think, who did they have on the commentary? I think it was Anthony Crawler. He predicted a Chris Bulk knockout within like three rounds, you know, and I bought into that. But no, Ashley Lane was absolutely fantastic. And what, you know, what a fairy tale now to be the, you know, the new British and Commonwealth bantamweight champion. Unbelievable. Chris Bulk is, yeah, he's in no man's land now. You know, that's a bad loss. It looked like he was gathering a little bit of momentum after losing his O. He kind of come back with a couple of good wins. He was looking good, but it's a terrible setback for him. I don't know if there's a rematch that can happen. I'm sure they'll probably try and do that. But yeah, bad stuff for Chris Bulk now, 13-2. Also on the card, he looked really good, but friend of the show, Willie Hutchinson, now 17-1. I still would like to see him right the wrong, that one loss he has to Lennox Clark. But anyway, he was back here with a TKO against Martin Halbern, who I believe was German. He's now 17-3, down twice, sorry, once in the second round. And yeah, it was for the WBC International Light Heavyweight title. He looked good there, Willie Hutchinson. Also on the card, he wasted no time at all. Moses Itauma moved to 8-0, a TKO for him in the first round against Dan Garber, who's now 6-3. I did say, you know, Dan Garber had been stopped in the eighth and final round to Thomas Carty. And other than that, he'd never been stopped. So yeah, Moses Itauma getting him out in a round. Yeah, it was a good win. You know, he always starts fast, Itauma. He's always looking to get the job done early, and it was more of the same. Also on the card as well, Royston Barney-Smith moved to 9-0, a KO for him in round four against Jose Perez, now 11-12 with a draw. Perez counted out after being floored by a series of left hooks to the head. That was a fourth round KO for Royston. Also on the card, the pro debut of Luke McCormack. He moved to 1-0 with a nice win, a KO in round two against journeyman Robin Zamora, now 21-27. It was a body shot, and yeah, Zamora, you know, he's a tough guy. Comes over here, gets sort of stopped, I'd say once every three times he takes a loss. So yeah, he's relatively tough, but you know, a good win for Luke McCormack there, and also a good win for Sean Noakes, who's now 7-0, a TKO for him in the third round against Marian Wesolowski, who's now 4-13 with a draw. Also on the card as well, I should mention Sonny Ali with a TKO. He gets his first stoppage win there against Peter Alexandrov, who's quite a sort of sturdy journeyman. So that was unexpected. So good stuff for Sonny Liston Ali, I should say, getting his first KO win. That's it, though, for the York Hall card. Moving now to the Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA. Over here, we'll be speaking to him later on in the show. Albert Bell, now 26-0. A KO for him in the very first round against former IBF super bantamweight world champion Jonathan Romero, who's now 35-3. Romero, it's a little known fact that he was the first 2008 Olympian to win a world title in the whole world. So yeah, obviously beat Kiko Martinez all those years ago. I don't think he's the same fighter now, but Albert Bell, not noted as a puncher at all, and that overhand right was such a brutal shot that obviously put Romero down. It was a brutal knockout. Like, it was a sickening, scary knockout. There were people saying, is Romero dead? It was that bad of a knockout. And Albert Bell, like I say, not known for his punching power, but he's now, he's picked up 3 stoppages in a row now, so it's certainly coming through for him. Like I say, we'll be speaking to him in a few moments' time. There's not too much more to review, actually, so we've flown through it pretty quickly. Also on the review part, because it wasn't on the same card, we're now moving to the final card. It took place on Saturday at the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield, Yorkshire, United Kingdom. It was live on DAZN. Let's touch on the undercard first. Liam Cameron with a nice win, a first round TKO against Hussein Etaba, who's now 16-9 with 3 draws. Nice little run out there for Liam Cameron. Happy for him to be part of the show now, 23-5. James Flint, now 14-1 with 2 draws, a unanimous decision victory over 10 rounds. He takes away the O from Ricky Hatton's son, Campbell Hatton, now 14-1. It was for the Central Area Super Lightweight title. Very, very, very good fight. And I tweeted that on Twitter. I said, or X as it's known these days, I said, what an action-packed fight. And then someone come at me and said, it wasn't close. And I said, okay, I didn't say it was close. I said it was an action-packed fight. Well, he barely won any rounds. I didn't say that Campbell Hatton needed to win rounds. It was just an action-packed fight. Like, I don't understand that. Hopefully people can understand me saying it's action-packed does not necessarily mean that it was a 5-5 kind of fight after 10 rounds. It was, I guess, when you score it, quite lopsided to James Flint. But it was a great fight. Like I said, it was a lot of action. James Flint was particularly impressive. You know, there was a lot of needle in the build-up. Nice to see that kind of eradicated afterwards. You know, good sportsmanship and the rest of it. But that was a fantastic, fantastic fight. Campbell Hatton, I think, would learn a hell of a lot from that fight. There were times where it looked like he was just out on his feet. Like, you know, he's got a heck of a chin, Campbell Hatton, and it, you know, it was a proper war the other night there. I've got to say, you know, Ricky Hatton was sat there ringside, obviously looking very, very nervous. His son's in the ring, his son's in a tough fight, and obviously the corner, you know, Matthew Hatton, the brother of Ricky, you could see, like, you know, they're well involved emotionally, as they should be. It's, you know, it's a family affair. But I was sitting there watching it thinking, if I was Ricky, I'd be very, very proud of my son here. I'd be very, very proud. And I think they were, you know. Matthew said, I'm very proud of my nephew. He sent out a tweet again on X. And yeah, 100%. Like, he showed he's got some serious balls, Campbell Hatton, you know. I really massively respect him. Not that I didn't respect him before this, but he's gone up so much higher in my estimations in terms of the fighting heart, you know. I think a lot of, you know, famous fathers in boxing, they have sons, the son turns pro, and the son sometimes gets unnecessary hype and sometimes gets unnecessary put-downs on the other side of that. You know, there's a flip side. So you can get kind of unfair criticism, and you can get unfair sort of pumping up, if you like. And you know, Campbell Hatton, like, people have been very, very harsh about him for no reason, but like I say, the other night he showed balls of steel. you could see that Flint, you know, he was so much more experienced. I'm guessing he probably had quite a deep amateur career or something, you know, or he's done so many rounds sparring. He just knew what to do. He knew what shots to throw and when to throw them. And you could just see he was so much more experienced. It was just clear to see. But Campbell Hatton, you know, with the youth on his side, he didn't stop trying. You know, everything he did to 100%. He was throwing with bad intentions all night long. And like I say, I believe that's the first time he's gone 10 rounds, you know. And yeah, he was gassing like hell at the end, but managed to get through the fight, especially, like I say, after being hurt a couple times. But no, credit to James Flint. Campbell Hatton may have found his level, I don't know. But like I say, I think, you know, I'm very proud of him. I'm very, very happy for him. And like I say, he might come back and really improve from that. You know, I don't think we need to see a rematch just yet. It might be one for down the line, because he didn't really have the answers for James Flint. But like I say, give him a few more confidence building fights, a few more learning fights, and maybe we could see it again, perhaps in a year or 18 months. Also on the card, Sandy Ryan, completely dominating performance here. She's now 7-1 with a draw, a successful defence of her WBO welterweight world title. Fourth round win there for her. Terry Harper in the other corner, retired on her stall, didn't come out for round 5. I think it was more Steffi Ball, you know, pulling the plug there. She's now 14-2 with two draws. Like I said, it was so one-sided, it was quite shocking. Terry Harper came out and decided to try and kind of meet Sandy in the middle of the ring. It was a little bit of a firefight, which was never going to play well for Terry Harper. Sandy Ryan, to her credit, you know, I don't think she's the most likable character, in all honesty, you know, but she's a really good fighter. She's gone out there to the States. They said that she's, you know, completely moved away from any distractions in the UK. She's training under Kay Caroma in Las Vegas. You know, it's testament to how serious she's taking this game. I think she's a very, very good fighter, and she's going to be very hard to beat. So yeah, I'm excited about her future. Like I say, I think there's some great fights. She's calling out all the big names. There's some fantastic fights that can be made for her. But yeah, she absolutely dominated, you know, Terry Harper there. And Harper, I don't know how much left she's got in the tank, you know. Like I say, she moved from super featherweight right up to, you know, 154 pounds. She became a champion there. But yeah, I thought that she'd look pretty good at welterweight. You know, it's more kind of natural for her. But yeah, she looked absolutely terrible with Sandy Ryan there. So I don't know what she's got left at all. And moving up the card once again, Ishmael Davis with a good win. He's now 13-0, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds in favour of him. And yeah, he beats Troy Williamson, friend of the show, now 20-3 with a draw. Ishmael Davis was extremely sharp early on. You know, great, great balance, good jab. I like what he was doing. You could see very, very smart. Troy Williamson was kind of lunging in, falling short, missing wildly, being countered. And yeah, he was playing right into the hands of Ishmael Davis, quite literally. So yeah, he looked really bad, Troy Williamson, early on in the fight. Like, honestly, I was sitting there thinking, is he shot all of a sudden? Like, what's going on here? It didn't look like the Troy Williamson of old. He's been in a few wars. And Ishmael Davis, it was my first time kind of sitting down and studying him. He looked the full package early on. But then the tables slightly turned. Troy Williamson really found another gear. And Ishmael Davis, who I don't think had gone past, I'm not sure how many rounds, but he was getting into unknown territory. And he seemed to really gas out between kind of rounds, I'd say like 6 and 10. He did actually close the show quite nicely, finished strong in the last couple rounds, but from like round 6 to 10, it was really starting to turn. Troy Williamson's pressure was starting to get to Davis. He was beginning to crack under that pressure a little bit, and Troy Williamson had moments and therefore made it a bit of a close fight in those stages. But like I say, the rightful winner was Ishmael Davis, and Yeah, Troy Williamson, it was just a bit of a bizarre performance. It wasn't a good look. He's gone straight on social media and started calling out people at 160. He said his days at 154 are over. I think he's probably had a fight too many at 154, which is a bit of a shame. I think he's got a lot of miles on the clock now. But hopefully he can regain some of his former form if he does move up to 160, you know, and he's not depleted. Obviously, we know as well that he missed the weight by like 4 pounds, which was quite unprofessional on his behalf. But yeah, I thought he'd be a lot more effective. I thought that he could, you know, he could win. And yeah, he didn't really look close to winning at any point, to be honest. And yeah, the main event, Dalton Smith, what a fantastic win. He's now 16-0, a crippling body shot in round 5. And he stops Jose Zepeda, now 37-5. It was for the vacant WBC silver super lightweight title. It was a very good fight, especially through those first 4 rounds. It was a little bit like a chess match. Again, Dalton Smith, as I've said so many times, does the basics really well. He's not a flashy fighter. He's not a flashy man inside or outside of the ring, you know. He respected Jose Zepeda a hell of a lot. Zepeda was trying his little tricks, you know. You know, he was trying to land sneaky little shots behind the guard of Dalton Smith. He got through with one or two. You know, I think Dalton Smith probably felt that power. He really respected him, and it was a good, smart performance from Dalton Smith. But that body shot in round 5, you know, he hit Zepeda with his shot. Zepeda, it was a delayed reaction. He goes down, and honestly, the referee could have counted to, you know, to 100. He wasn't getting up. He was absolutely down and out from that body shot, right in the sweet spot. And yeah, it's a fantastic win for Dalton Smith. And of course, on paper, you've got to compare that to Jose Zepeda's loss with Regis Progre. You've got to compare it to his loss with Richardson Hitchens. And Dalton Smith has made a serious statement. I did say if he stops him, it's a statement. But, you know, if he was going to stop him, I thought it's going to be coming late in the fight, if anything. But he really raised his game there, and it was just a fantastic, fantastic performance. And he looks $1 million. He looks like a future world champion, if I've ever seen one. I really rate him so highly. They're talking about the Adam Azim fight. I just don't think it's going to happen, but it'd be great to see it. But yeah, the man is a very, very, very big talent, and I cannot wait to see his future unfold. But anyway, that is it though for the review part of the show. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated super featherweight contender, ranked number one in the world with a WBO. It is, of course, Mr. Albert Bell. Albert, welcome back on the show, my friend.
Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. So, Albert, we last spoke back in November. At the time, you'd just beaten Jason Velez. And your next fight after that was this weekend, just gone, of course. You boxed former IBF super bantamweight world champion Jonathan Romero. A first-round knockout, and what a knockout it was. Talk me through those 2 minutes it lasted.
I don't know. I was just in my zone. I really can't really explain it. It's just I was in my zone, and I just caught him with a big shot.
And it really was a big shot. I mean, it was a stunning knockout. You know, that's the definition, literally, of a scary knockout. It was truly breathtaking, that overhand right. Surely, Al, but that's got to be knockout of your career, surely.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, most definitely. I think it takes the cake.
And talking of knockouts, for a long time you were kind of stuck on like 4 or 5 knockouts. Now you're on a 3-fight stoppage streak. If power was the only thing missing to your game, does this now make you a complete fighter?
I would guess so.
One other thing I want to touch on, obviously, Albert. Again, we last spoke in November. I thought of you, you know, when the new year turned. Obviously, I thought of your mother, and I had no idea when we'd scheduled this interview that it would actually be on what would have been your mother's birthday. Albert, how's things been? Because I remember when we did an interview, you know, when it was much fresher, it affected you a lot mentally. You were talking about how you were going to try to use it as motivation going forward. Where are you with it all at the moment?
It's just a process, you know. So some days are tougher than others. today is one of those days. I just, you know, try to keep letting her legacy live through me, you know, and just doing things I know I will make her proud, you know. So it's the same, just using this motivation and fuel, fuel to my fire, you know, just, you know, like I just said, just trying to make her happy and proud of me.
Have you done anything particularly special today, for example?
Today I went, so I'm on my way to Cleveland right now. I'm driving to Cleveland Airport over here because I'm about to fly out to see the Valdez-Wilson fight. So today I went out to the visited the grave site, bought her some flowers, and said a prayer over her grave site.
Absolutely. God bless. God bless. But yeah, let's move on. Let's move on to the fun side of boxing. I say that very sarcastically, the politics side. Obviously, there's a lot to touch on here. I mean, you're ranked number one in the world with a WBO. You and Archie Sharp, who was formerly ranked number one with a WBO, who, of course, lost his ranking for no apparent reason. He was still undefeated. He wasn't inactive. Both of you, though, petitioned to the WBO to let you guys fight each other because it seemed, for whatever reason, the champion Navarrete doesn't seem to get fed any mandatories. All you guys wanted to do was fight in a final eliminator, which was more than fair, I think, in everybody's eyes. And for the winner to just finally get a title shot, you were both turned down by the WBO. In the meantime, Navarrete moves up to lightweight, but is allowed to keep hold of the 130 title, which is crazy in itself. But just this week, they announced that the WBO interim title is now on the line for two men that have both already had their shots at Navarrete, Valdez and Liam Wilson. And you know, the winner will probably be elevated to full champion, or at the very worst, get another shot at Navarrete if he does come back down. What the hell is going on, Albert?
I wish I could tell you. I have absolutely no idea. Politics is just, it's insane, you know. It's not making any, it doesn't make no sense, but I don't know.
I mean, that whole situation that I've just described there, I'm guessing, you know, a lot of our listeners probably weren't aware of that until I explained it there, because obviously Archie's a friend of mine. I kind of know what's going on, but that is right. Everything I've said there, right? That's correct.
100% correct. We sent in because we knew Navarrete was elevated to super champion status, so he don't have to face a mandatory until February of next year if he stays at 130. Which he probably won't if he wins. I don't know. It's just crazy that we got denied. We're both, Archie Sharp's with 24-0, 27-0. And at the time when we sent the petition in, Sharp was at 3 and I was at 1. I know he slipped down to 5 now, I believe. But at that time, I was 1, he was 3. It makes perfect sense. We had a company that was going to pay the purses. We had TV network. The Zone was going to show it. Everything was lined up perfect, and we got denied for it. So, and then they approved these guys that both already, like you said, had their shots and lost in bad fashions at that. Wilson did good early, but eventually got stopped, and he just brutal fight against Oscar Valdez. And he gets another shot. I don't know. So we're going down here now, try to get into some see figure something out. Hopefully, you know, we run into Paco and somebody from WBO down here at the fight, and try to get something figured out.
Yeah, hopefully. Make sure the video's rolling. Right. Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Archie about 10 minutes ago, and and I was just speaking to him just briefly, saying that I'd be speaking to you on the phone. It's a bizarre situation, like we say. Obviously, you're both in similar positions. Do you think that because you're both not with, with Top Rank, I think it is fair to say, and maybe because you're both, you know, with smaller promoters, that you're being pushed aside repeatedly, Albert?
For sure. I think that has a big part to do with it. But that's the boxing. I mean, that's the game. You know, I mean, there's politics about it. So I'm open to work with Top Rank again, to do with contracts or whatever. Whatever it takes to give me my shot. And as long as it makes sense, you know, in all aspects, it's got to make sense. But I still have good relationships with Top Rank. So let's see.
Yeah, and also, again, I like Andres Cortez, but, you know, he fought a few weeks ago, and I actually texted Archie. I said, I'm telling you now, he's going to get a huge ranking, you watch. And then we saw the new rankings go out, and he's now, I think, number three, which was just crazy. Yeah, I just literally said, look what I said to you last month. But, yeah, where does this leave you, Albert? Obviously, you know, you're your own fighter. It would have been lovely to see you and Archie fight, but you are your own man. You've got to look out for your best interests. Obviously, it's frustrating. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Can you see it at the moment or not?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out. That's like, hopefully I can get the winner of this fight. If they pull a champion, hopefully I get to fight them. You know, I know they won't have that super champion status. So hopefully they make me the mandatory or get something right in that I'll be mandatory. I don't know. So hopefully I'll fight the winner of this fight.
Yeah, we hope so. And how do you think this fight will play out, Valdez-Wilson? Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight. They're both there to hit and be hit. They both have very good left hooks. We're going to see how much Valdez has left to him. It's interesting. I'm not really sure. It's going to be an interesting fight, though.
And also, since we last spoke, Lamont Roach has picked up a title. If I remember correctly, I think you said that you both kind of said to each other, whoever wins a title first will give the other one a shot. I think you said that. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, we had those type of conversations.
Yeah. Do you think that little pact holds no kind of real weight now?
We'll see. You know, I know he got a homecoming fight in D.C. coming up, and I know him and Oshaki want to fight each other. So I don't know, you know, but I know he's a real fighter. He'd be open to fight me if it makes sense for him.
And if he did get the Oshaki Foster fight, that unification, how do you see that one playing out, Albert?
It'd be a good fight. I just see a decision by either guy. I don't see nobody getting hurt or outclassed very much in that fight, but may the best man win.
May the best man win. And just briefly, my last real question I was going to ask you, Albert, what is next? I know it's probably a bit too soon to ask that at the moment, but what do you want to do? Perhaps when do you want to next be in the ring? Obviously, you only did a round the other day.
Yeah, hopefully, like I said, who knows? Soon as possible, man. Soon as possible. I just trying to figure this, navigate this crazy sport, so... I'm open to fight any of the top guys, any of the undefeated guys, any of the world champions, any of the top contenders. So as soon as possible, I'm ready.
And a little shout out as well to Vic Green, obviously keeping you busy, which is a fantastic thing. Just before we wrap things up, Albert, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, just sign out with a little message. It's fantastic to have you on, as it always is.
Y'all keep following and supporting me. I'm here. I arrived. They trying to blackball me, but you know what? We gonna keep pushing through, and just keep the eye out. Everything's gonna come into fruition.
Absolutely, absolutely. My fingers and toes are crossed for you, my friend. Listen, Albert, as always, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for your time. Congrats again on the win. A brilliant knockout, and we'll speak soon again, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Now, before we continue with part two, it's time to thank our sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by Manscaped, but the opinions expressed are those of myself and former heavyweight world title challenger Eddie Chambers. Manscaped are a leading brand in below-the-waist grooming. I say a leading brand, but in my opinion, they run the game. Now, fellas, let's be honest. We've all got a bad shaving story when it comes to that particular region on the body. We all have. I personally used to use a single blade razor. razor with cold water, no shaving cream, nothing. The amount of times I'd accidentally cut myself was crazy, but I didn't know any better. It wasn't the kind of thing you'd want to ask someone about for advice either. Well, times have well and truly changed. Our friends over at Manscaped sent us some products to try out and to review for our loyal listeners. I want to introduce you all to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This fifth generation trimmer features two interchangeable next gen skin safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. With dual LED spotlights, you'll achieve better visibility, making every trim more precise and hassle free. If you're worried that you'll make a mess, you'll be happy to know that this tool is waterproof. Shave in the shower, shave in the bath, shave in a champagne-filled hot tub, shave in the rain. Actually, maybe not the rain. But trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best friend, leaving you feeling comfortable and confident. You can also get this Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra as part of a kit. That's what I'd recommend. Manscaped currently sell the Platinum Package, the Performance Package, and the Perfect Package. You really need to check their products out if you aren't already aware of them. I'm also a huge fan of their formulas. I couldn't leave that part out. Their formulas smell insanely good. I was chatting to a friend the other day and he was telling me how when he uses the Crop Preserver, which is their famous anti-chafing ball deodorant, his girlfriend wants to smell his nuts as soon as he's applied it. That is how magical this stuff is. The aim of the game is to have people wanting to run back to your sack. You must all be fools if you've not manscaped your balls. Get rid of your garden for a bigger looking hard cut! Visit manscaped.com and use the promo code BOXHARD for 20% off plus free shipping. Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. There's only one piece actually to mention, but Puerto Rican sensation Subriel Matias makes a homecoming return to Puerto Rico when he defends his IBF World Junior Welterweight World Title against Liam Paro. It's going to be going down at the Coliseo Juan Albin Cruz Abreu in Manati on June the 15th. It's going to be live on DAZN, and that is a Saturday. So again, it's going to be a good fight there. Liam Paro against Subriel Matias, who's one of my favourite fighters in the world to watch. I don't think we've got a an undercard announced just yet, but hopefully it's a good one. It's good that he's having a homecoming, of course. That's that. Moving on to the preview part. This one goes down later today at the Wayne State Fieldhouse in Detroit, Michigan, USA. It's live on DAZN. We're going to see Vladimir Shishkin, 15-0. He's back in a 10-rounder. He steps in with the very, very tough Mike Guy, who's 12-7 with one draw. I think still only been stopped just the one time. He's a very tough guy. Also on the card as well, return to the ring for Shojahan Ergashev, who's coming off a loss, of course, last time to Subriel Matias, who we just spoke about there. He's 23-1. Like I say, coming off that loss, he steps in with Juan Huertas, who is 17-4 with a draw. Juan Huertas, I think, off the top of my head, has been stopped three times in his four losses, and he's got 13 knockout wins from his 17 wins. So usually, he is either putting you asleep or getting put asleep. And like I say, Shojahan Ergashev is very much the same. 23-1. He's got 20 KOs, and the one loss was by stoppage as well. Moving now to tomorrow at the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona, USA. This one's going to be live on ESPN and ESPN Plus. It's also going to be live on Sky Sports in the UK. It's a really good card. I like this card. There's a few really good fights, I think. Let's start right down the card. We're going to see Emiliano Vargas, 8-0 in a 6-rounder at lightweight against Nelson Hampton, who's 10-8, only been stopped twice. We're also going to see Richard Torres Jr. back in action. Always exciting to watch him. He's 8-0. He's back in an 8-rounder, and he steps in with Donald Haynesworth, who's 18-8 with a draw. Again, you know, people are expecting an early finish here for Richard Torres. You know, I love watching him fight. He always comes to try and get the job done early. You know, the moustache makes him look about 45 years of age, but he's only 24, the 6'2" southpaw, coming off a win last time out against Curtis Harper. He didn't look too great in that fight, but yeah, Don Haynesworth, again, another guy that sort of likes to sleep you or get sleeped. You know, he's 18-8, like I say, with a draw. He's got 16 KO wins, but he is now 41 years of age. He's coming off two wins in a row, though, two stoppage wins. But prior to that, he lost five in a row. One thing that stands out, obviously, he's been around the scene. You know, got stopped to Bryant Jennings back in 2017 in three rounds. Got stopped to Zhilei Zhang in three rounds. Got stopped in one round to Guido Vianello. Got stopped in four rounds to Simon Keane. Got stopped in six rounds to Dempsey McKean. But there was one man, and it's the son of former heavyweight world champion Tommy Morrison. He's got a son called Trey Lippe. And Trey Lippe is a massive puncher. He's got his dad's right hand for sure. Well, Trey Lippe, of his wins, he's got 18 wins, 17 by KO, and Donald Haynesworth's the one guy that he has never stopped, or didn't stop. So that's just one interesting factor there, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, they're expecting it to be another one or two round job for Richard Torres, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out. I think he'll definitely stop him, but, you know, the question is going to be when, I think, because, yeah, he obviously can be quite sturdy at times. What else do we have on this card? We're going to see Raymond Muratalla, who is currently 19-0. He's back in a 10-rounder. He's always exciting to watch. He can certainly crack. He gets in with Zolasani and Dongani, who's 31-4. We didn't see him too long ago. He stepped in with Arnold Barboza, and he got stopped. But obviously, once upon a time, he lost on points to Devin Haney. I think he'll probably get stopped against Raymond Muratalla. But yeah, his gas tank against Barboza was terrible. Like, he was blowing really hard. Don't know if he just had an off night or whatever, but I expected him to probably go the distance and lose on points there. But now I think, you know, if Barboza can stop you, I'd say Muratalla probably has a good chance. Also on the card, another fight should be quite decent. We're going to see Lindolfo Delgado, 19-0, back out again against Carlos Sanchez, who's 25-2. That's over 10 rounds there. And we're going to see the undisputed fight at minimum weight for the ladies. We're going to see Sinisa Estrada, 25-0. She steps in with Yocasta Valle, who is 30-2. It's for all the marbles, IBF, WBA, WBC, WBO. There's a lot of bad blood between the two ladies. And it's great that we're actually seeing this fight because, you know, obviously, you know, the ladies' minimum weight division is probably not the most glamorous of divisions in world boxing. But, you know, still, politics can get in the way. And it looked like politics were going to get in the way between this, you know, in between this fight happening because just two ladies hold all the belts, and it's always great when we see one champion, you know, in a whole division. It's great when we have an undisputed fight. But still, politics looked like they were going to get in the way here, but it's great that, you know, we're seeing the fight happen. It should be interesting. And the main event, Oscar Valdez, 31-2, stepping in the ring with Liam Wilson, who is 13-2, is for the WBO Interim World Super Featherweight title, which is a bit of a joke. We spoke about that with Albert, but yeah, should be a really good fight. Obviously, Liam Wilson, you know, he can punch, and Valdez can punch. Valdez coming off that fight of the year contender last year against Navarrete. It was just an unbelievable all-Mexican war, and yeah, like I say, I wouldn't mind seeing it again, in all honesty. Liam Wilson, the one thing that kind of stands out to me is obviously the experience. You know, Valdez is much more experienced than Wilson, and Wilson, of his two losses, you know, he's been stopped in both of them, to Joe Nuñez and to Emmanuel Navarrete, despite dropping Navarrete, of course. Oscar Valdez is 2-1 to get a KO. I can't quite understand why the odds are that high. I would expect him to win, But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he stopped him late, which would even be better odds. But 2-1 for the KO seems quite tempting for me. Moving now to the Overtime Elite Arena. This one's going to be live on DAZN. It's also taking place on Friday. Just one fight to mention over here. Giovanni Marquez, the son of Raul Marquez, the former world champion and now broadcaster. He gets out in a six-rounder against Jason Velez, who's 30-13 with a draw. Moving now to Saturday now. This one goes down at the Arena Armeech in Sofia, Bulgaria. Yeah, we don't often go there, but we're going there for the Pulev brothers. Let's start with the older of the two, Kubrat Pulev, the more known. He's currently 30-3. He steps in with a guy called Ihor Shevazutsky, who's 11-1. With 9 KOs, and Shevazutsky, some people might remember, his one loss came to Martin Bacoli. He lost to Martin Bacoli by a third round TKO. That was in Poland when he went out to Poland, the same night that Lukasz Rozanski knocked out Alan Babich in a round for the, I think it was for the Bridgeweight WBC title. So anyway, it's a bit of a mashup card between, you know, Ben Shalom and some promoter in Poland. And yeah, like I say, without going off on a tangent, Shevazutsky got stopped by Martin Bacoli. So he's back here against Pulev, who didn't look very good last time out. I think I was really gunning at him. You know, his last performance, he was absolutely dreadful against Andre Worzyk. Because Andre Worzyk, and I'm really going off on a tangent, I don't mean to, but this guy Andre Worzyk, he took, I think it was 7 years out of the ring. He took a massive, massive layoff. It never made any sense, but he stopped boxing in 2016, come back in 2022, got knocked out in two rounds by a guy who was 3-4 with two draws. Then he come back and beat a journeyman, first round TKO against a guy who was 6-2 with a draw. So he'd done three rounds and he was 1-1, including losing by knockout to a guy with a losing record. Then stepped in with Pulev, and Pulev went 10 rounds with him and looked absolutely dreadful. He won every round, by the way, Pulev, but he did look absolutely dreadful. But anyway, Pulev, like I say, is back on this card and steps in with Ihor Shevazutsky. And the other Pulev brother on the card, Tavel Pulev, who himself, I believe, is about 41 years of age. But anyway, he's in probably, well, I don't know, probably an equally competitive fight as his brother Kubrat. He steps in with Rolly Fogum, who's 16-2 with a draw. Tavel Pulev still only that one loss to Sergei Kovalev. He's currently 18-1. That's it. No. Also on the card, I should mention as well, the UK's Derek Osazi on the undercard. Makes no sense at all, but he's out as well. He's 12-1. He's in an 8-rounder against Joel Julio, who's 39-19. Moving now to the YouTube Theatre in Inglewood, California, USA. Let's dive into this. It goes down on DAZN on Saturday. There's so much boxing on different networks this weekend. Let's start though with this one here. Alexis Rocha on the undercard. He gets out again. He's 23-2. He's coming off that loss when he was stopped to Giovanni Santillan last time out. That was a bit of a shock. A lot of people fancy Rocha. I think he was the favorite, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, gets in with Frederick Lawson, who is currently 30-4, and people will remember his last fight. He stepped in with Virgil Ortiz Jr., and the referee, Tony Weeks, made one of the worst stoppages you'll ever see. That was back in January. So yeah, he got stopped by Virgil Ortiz in a bit of a joke of a fight. He's back against Alexis Rocha. Hopefully the Ghanaian has a bit better luck this time. And the main event should be an interesting one. It's for the WBA Super World Cruiserweight title. We're going to see Arsene Gulamirian, 27-0. Highly, you know, respected fighter who has, yeah, I mean, the cruiserweight division, obviously, since Usyk left it, since Gassiev left it, hasn't really had that same sort of glamour. I think he did sort of, you know, get maneuvered into like an easy title shot and the rest of it. Like, I genuinely couldn't tell you who he beat for the world title, but he is the WBA super champion. He is a good fighter, and he's kind of solidified himself as a good fighter in recent fights. But he steps in with Gilberto Ramirez, who is 45-1, the Mexican. Last time out, obviously beat Joe Smith Jr. And like I say, you know, once upon a time was at you know, at 168, he was a world champion at 168 pounds. And yeah, he's back here. I think I'm making, wait, am I making that up? No, he was champion at 168, then he moved to 175, obviously lost his O to Dimitri Bivol, and now finds himself up at cruiserweight. So it's a massive, massive jump. We know that he always hydrated, and you know, he got massive, you know, overnight, when, you know, after the weigh-in, he would put on crazy weight and he'd be huge on fight night. So those advantages are not really going to be there now. He's fighting a true big man in Gulamirian, so should be an interesting one. Gulamirian is the underdog, even though he's a champion, but there's been a lot of late money on Gulamirian. Moving now to the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. I'm going to be coming to you, Eddie, for sure here. You haven't done any talking just yet. But let's touch on the undercard. We're going to see return to the ring for Julio Cesar Martinez, 20-3 in a 12-rounder, defending his WBC flyweight world title against the undefeated Angelino Cordova, who's 18-0 with a draw. I'm going to come to you for this one, actually, Eddie. Brian Mendoza, the man who, of course, stopped the Towering Inferno, Mr. Sebastian Fandora, he's back in action against, in fact, you might not know this guy, but he gets in with Sergei Bohachuk, who has a record of 23-1. Bohachuk, 23 KOs in those 23 wins, and the one loss came by stoppage as well. So yeah, you know, he lost to Brandon Adams. So never gone the distance. You know, I don't think this one will go the distance either. You know, he gets in with, like I say, Brian Mendoza, very tough, sturdy guy, caused a few upsets. Coming off a loss last time, though, to Tim Su, went 12 rounds in Australia with Tim Su. He's never been stopped himself. So like I say, Bohachuk does, you know, he tends to knock people out, or he's just been knocked out himself in that one loss. Will he become the first man to knock out Mendoza? I don't know, but he is very vulnerable himself. Like I say, Bohachuk is, you know, the power's legit, but other than the power, he doesn't have too much going for him. Have you seen much of him, Eddie, to give a good take or not?
Not much, but, you know, just, you know, I've seen Mendoza a few times, and and knocking out Sebastian Fandora is a big upset, and just in general a big fight, and then going with, you know, 12 with Tim Zhu doing well, and he's an overall tough guy. He's a spoiler, you know what I mean? He's the kind of guy that you step in with and you better be on your A game, otherwise it's going to be a problem. And being that this Bohachuk is really you know, a real puncher but also vulnerable, speaks to the excitement and the kind of edge of your seat. Always be prepared, or always don't go to the refrigerator kind of thing, because he can be, you know, he can get caught, or he can all of a sudden, like you said, be the first one to stop Mendoza. So yeah, I mean, it's an exciting situation. I mean, I'd like to see it. I would love to see what happens, and you know, how the fight's progressing as it goes on, especially if this Bohachuk is really aggressive, and you know, Mendoza is kind of like the kind of guy who, you know, takes his time, maybe down, you know, by a few points, you know, by, you know, down on the cards, but just come in there and catch you, that kind of thing. And that's obviously what he did with the Towering Inferno. But in some cases, that's a dangerous way to play. Obviously, you've seen it with Tim Zhu. You can't just get behind on the cards and look for one punch, or even try to, you know, think that you're going to be able to, you know, lightning is going to strike twice. You know what I mean? You win two big fights by knockout after losing. It's just, you know what I mean? You got to kind of do the work. So, you know, it's an interesting situation. I definitely want to see the fight, but yeah, don't go to your refrigerator.
And moving up the card to the next one, Eddie, Irislandi Lara, 29-3 with three draws, stepping in the ring with Michael Zarafa, 31-4 over 12 rounds for Lara's WBA middleweight world title. Some people, you know, talking about it on social media and stuff, saying that they're going to back Zarafa for the upset win, and it would be an upset win, but just based off the fact, I think, that Lara's been out of the ring for almost 2 years. He's now 41 years of age, which has kind of come out of nowhere. I didn't know he was that old. I think he is one of the few Cubans, by the way, that is telling the truth with his age rather than making himself younger. But slight correction, he's 40. He's going to be 41 in about 2 weeks' time. But yeah, like I say, I would have to favour Lara. You know, I just think Zarafa as well. I don't know off the top of my head how old he is as well, but he's got to be up there in age. He's also, you know, like Lara, not boxed since 2022, though Lara boxed in May and Zarafa boxed in November. And Zarafa, you know, he's in decent sort of form, hasn't lost since his loss to Jeff Horn in their rematch back in December 2019. He's had four fights in that time. So, yeah, he's been quite inactive in all honesty, really. But, yeah, you know, he's in decent form going in. It's just going to be interesting to see what Lara's got at this point, you know, this point in time. All the best to him. Moving up the card, I'm going to come straight back to you here, Eddie. Rolando Romero, 15-1, defending his WBA super lightweight world title against Isaac Pitbull Cruz, 25-2 with a draw. Interesting fight. Both men, of course, suffering losses at the hands of Gervonta Tank Davis.
Yeah, they both lost to Tank, but in dramatically different fashions. However, they both gave him, you know, a bit of trouble early, but, you know, Tank is the kind, well, I don't want to say early for Pitbull Cruz. I think he was in the fight pretty much the whole time, not necessarily winning enough rounds, you know what I mean, but is at the same time, he was giving him work. He was making him work hard, but I think it was his hand or something that might have been giving him some trouble as well. But regardless, I think even if it was healthy, he still would have had a hard fight with Cruz because he's just one of those hard-nosed, tough Mexican guys that's going to keep coming, you know what I mean? And with Rolly, he's tough and he's really awkward, has a different kind of like style. He's like, it's funny. I remember Tank describing him by saying, you know, he's like one of those guys who come to the gym and they're, you know, they're doing well, but they're, you know, they're not really that good as they think they are skill wise, at least. But the awkwardness, I think, sometimes plays a really big part in how they do against higher level guys, because awkward is difficult. You know, don't get it twisted. Like, you think some of these guys, like, and the fact that he can punch also adds to that awkwardness. It's like kind of like Deontay Wilder. Like, he has a style that you really don't see often. Like, it's just like he throws whatever punch comes to mind. It's not a part of any kind of real plan or anything. He just throws a shot, and because he has that big punch, you know what I mean, I'm talking about Wilder, or in this case Romero, it kind of just, it makes it difficult, because now you got to be, you know, careful, and you got to your IQ has to be on a thousand to make sure that you're not going to get caught by something stupid. So, you know, even though they both gave him trouble, Tank, you know, that IQ is shining through, and it shows why he's, you know, one of the top guys out there. But as far as this fight goes, this is going to be a tough one. I think it's going to be more of a tough one and I'm being completely honest here. I'm not saying that I don't think he could win, but it's going to be a tough one, in my opinion, for Romero. Because, I mean, we've seen him hurt and stop once that we know, obviously, by Tank. But I think Cruz, his toughness, the way he fights, plus the last fight that Rolly had with the guy, that, you know, the old looking guy, I can't remember his name, sorry, but Moroso. He struggled. Yeah, Moroso, and he really struggled. Now this guy's tough, and as you can see in the other fight that he had recently, he can punch. So you know, you got to give Rolly a little grace because the guy is a lot better than a lot of people thought he was, and not as old as people think he was just because of how he looks. But, but I've seen him go through that struggle, and I could actually see him in this fight going through it again, because Cruz is not going to be ready to take a backward step unless he's forced to. And that's if he can get the respect from him, which I think he can. He has the power to do it. I think, you know, Tank said he's one of the hardest punchers, if not the hardest puncher he's ever been in the ring with, but he still has to land these shots. And Cruz is the kind of guy who also fought Tank, and Tank can also punch, and he just kept coming. So I think he's going to be there. He's going to be there all night, and Rolly's going to have to figure out a way to maybe might even have to box his way to a win. He might not be going in there trying to look for a, he probably shouldn't be going in there necessarily trying to look for a knockout, because you go looking for one, you might catch one yourself. So it's a dangerous situation. That this is a hell of a fight, but I think you got to watch Cruz. I think Cruz is going to be the one to watch in this. I don't know if it would be an upset, probably because of popularity purposes. They would think, you know, if Cruz wins, they would think it's an upset. But I think this fight is definitely, at the very least, a 50-50. I don't think it's no, you know, one-sided type of situation. Cruz is a serious player in this air fight.
Yeah, Cruz is the favorite. And yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the win for Romero over Barroso. It's crazy that we're mentioning both of Tony Weeks' two worst stoppages in recent months, both in the same podcast. Moving on to the main event, Tim Suedi for the WBO and WBC. The WBC's vacant super welterweight world titles, 24-0. Stepping in with late replacement Sebastian Fundora at a towering inferno. It was supposed to be Keith Thurman. I mean, wow, what a switch of opponents. I mean, completely different styles, completely different sizes, and perhaps a much tougher fight for young Tim Sue.
I couldn't agree with you more. This is the kind of situation, and this is going to sound bad, me saying this, and you know, I don't know if I myself would have made this decision, but if I was close to Tim Tszyu and if I was backing him, or if I was a manager or promoter, I would be like, look, we were pulling out of this one. You know why? Because, and I understand there's a lot of money involved, there's a lot of things going on, but none's more important than his popularity and how far he's trying to go with this. I don't think, because this just spells disaster to me. I look at this and say, Sebastian Fundora is a puncher. Now, if he was a big, tall, lanky guy who can't punch, and, you know, we could kind of like, you know, hope for that home cooking, or, you know, or that hometown promoter cooking, you know what I mean? If the fight got close, that's one thing. But this dude is like the kind of guy to get in there, and he's the only reason he's like they're taking a late replacement is because he looked vulnerable because he lost to Mendoza. But the way he lost wasn't like he got dismantled or taken apart. He lost by getting caught. And this is the thing that we have to really pay attention to, and we got to think about as, as fight fans and knowledgeable fight fans in general, you know, have to look at things for what they are. That was one or two punches in a fight. That's all it was. You know, back in the day, there would be guys that would lose fights. Man, some of these guys had terrible records. Not terrible. Well, they would be considered terrible nowadays. But they still were titleist, and they were fighting at the top of the game. And it's just crazy that they're looking at this guy as like, oh, just throw him in there. He's a late replacement guy. He's looking to upset the apple cart and grab his titles. I mean, that's just that. And I'm not saying that they're taking him lightly necessarily, but at the same time, he's a 6'6" junior super welterweight, junior middleweight. Like, come on, man. Like, it's not a easy situation. Now, he may go in there and dismantle. Maybe. But what if he doesn't? What if he goes in there and gets clipped or has a knockdown drag out with this guy? Maybe lose a decision in a situation like that. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things that goes with this that kind of you have to think about. As a promoter, as a manager, as, you know, his supporters. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be confident in him and you know, where he's going and what they expect from him as a high-level, championship-level fighter. But at the same time, there's a lot of dangers. You know what I mean? There's a lot of dangers with this fight. It's not easy, low-level type of guy if they're just pulling in, or a guy who's older. Like you were saying, like a Keith Thurman. He's, you know, Keith Thurman's a little bit past that. Most people think he's, you know, he's looking for that payday or whatever before he cash, you know, like looking to cash out. But, you know, I think that, and then he's prepared for Thurman. He knew he was fighting Thurman. Now he's stepping in with a guy that he wasn't 100% preparing for. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, he's 6 foot six, 154 pounds. Like, kind of, you know, it's just, it to me, it could do more harm than good. If he gets in there and gets caught and knocked out, I mean, that's crazy. Now, if he goes in there and dominates him and, you know, looks good doing it, great. But if it off chance that he gets caught or hurt, because it's not a soft punching guy that they putting in there. It's a big, long, tough dude that they trying to put in there. And yeah, because he got stopped, they looking at him, he got a weak chin. And I don't take nobody, I take absolutely no one lightly. And neither should they. And I'm not saying they are. But this is a, I don't know what kind of a step or what direction this is for them and why they would do this at this particular time. But I mean, hey, maybe they expect him to go dominate. And I mean, I think he should win. But it's dangerous. Is the all I'm saying is it is pretty damn dangerous. That's my point.
Yeah, I think you're right 100%, Eddie. And obviously, Fundora was preparing for Boachuk on the undercard anyway. So he, you know, he had this date in mind. He knew he'd be boxing on that night. It's not like he's been caught with, you know, really late notice. Obviously, he would have been preparing for Boachuk, who obviously also has a different style to Tim Tszyu, but not, you know, not the same complete change. I mean, it could not be further from a Keith Thurman style. You mentioned the big size difference and all the rest of it. Also, I don't know if you mentioned it, but, you know, Fundora is a southpaw as well. Like, literally, he is the polar opposite to Keith Thurman. Sorry, go on, Eddie.
Yeah, you know what? Why did I not even think about that? Jesus, tall southpaw, that's a nightmare. What? Yo, all right, just picture this, Joe. Like, why of all people? Now, I get it. It's easy. They were both preparing for fights. You know, both high-level guys, blah, blah, blah. But of all people to take in a short-notice fight, a tall southpaw puncher that only had one loss from getting caught, like, there's, to me, this is just not a good idea. Even if he wins and looks fantastic doing it, I'm happy for him. But just know that you got away with murder, because this could really be bad. Seriously.
Yeah, million percent. Looking at the odds, I'm stunned to see that Fundora is 11-1 for the KO win. He's 4-1 by any method. I mean, that is just a price you can't scroll past. I think that's very, very inviting. Eddie, go on. Last words on this, because we're on it for two.
Yeah, I know. This is just killing me. But I was going to say, I damn sure maybe looking to put one on just to see what happens. I might have to do it, Joe. I think I will.
Me too. But no, you're right. I mean, it's a really, really dangerous fight. And yeah, you know, look, Tim Tszyu, you know, you look back, he sort of boxed the likes of, you know, in recent times. I don't want to sort of, you know, put him down, but, you know, he's boxed the likes of Jeff Horn, you know, Tony Harrison, Terrell Gaucher. I don't think Terrell Gaucher is a guy who sort of has one foot out the door, but Tony Harrison definitely, you know, sort of at the end of his career, I think. Jeff Horn obviously was at the end of his career. Keith Thurman would have been sort of, you know, another piece of that same kind of pattern. This is a completely different type of fighter. And like I say, I give Fundora a massive, massive chance here. It's a really, really, really good card, that card there, from top to bottom. I think there's, you know, the Sue fight is for two world titles. The Romero fight is for a world title. Lara's got his title on the line. Mendoza against Boachuk's for an interim world title. Julio Cesar Martinez for a world title. So what's that? Including interim titles, we're going to see five world title fights on one card. It really is a massive card. And moving now to the final couple of shows to mention, we're going to start here on Sunday at the O2 Arena in Greenwich, London, United Kingdom. We're going to start with the undercard, but it's another decent card from top to bottom, really. Yeah, it's going to be live on Sky, obviously. Ben Whitaker, 6-0, gets in the ring again. The Surgeon is back in an 8-rounder here against Leon Willings, who is 7-1. Alan the Savage Babbage as well returns to the ring, 11-1, coming off that loss about a year ago now to Lucas Rosansky. He's back after that first round defeat. He gets in with Steve Robinson, who's 6-2, never been stopped. It's going to be a battle of the terrible gas tanks, I think. It's a 10-rounder. I don't think we're going to see it go 10, though. Also on the card as well, Vidal Riley, 10-0 in a step up. A 10-rounder here against Mikel Lawal, coming off that loss to Isaac Chamberlain last time. He's 17-1. He was terrible that night there. What else do we have? Callum Simpson, 13-0, getting in with Dullah Mbabe, who is 34-13, with a draw. That one's over 10 rounds there at super middleweight. Just want to touch on this guy, actually, the opponent of Callum Simpson. Just having a little look at his record. Like I say, 34-13. He's stopped 29 people himself, though. He's only been stopped twice in his 13 losses. A Tanzanian fighter. Been in there with a few guys. Actually got stopped in two rounds to Rocky Fielding. Got stopped in a round to Umar Salamov as well once upon a time. All right, let's move on. Another really, really good fight. A 50-50 fight on the card. I really like this. This one could steal the show, perhaps. Florian Marku, 13-0 with a draw in a 10-rounder against friend of the show, Chris Congo, 14-2. Congo coming off 14 months out the ring since he lost to Echo Esserman in what was a close fight. I'd love to see him do the business here. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. Like I say, should be a bit of a chess match. A lot of people very, very high on Chris Congo. I'd love to see him do it, like I say. And the main event, Fabio Wardley. I don't know if you want to give an opinion here, Eddie, you can. Or if you don't want to, that's fine. But Fabio Wardley, 17-0. Stepping in the ring with Fraser Clark, 8-0. Somebody's O must go. It's for the British and Commonwealth heavyweight titles. For me, my pick would be Fabio Wardley to win the fight. He's on a heck of a run at the moment, obviously. I think he's put together the most amount of knockouts in a row in UK boxing. It's definitely, I think, out of him and Hamza Shiraz. But anyway, Fabio Wardley, like I say, 17-0, 16 KOs, man. And he's put together 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 6, yeah, 16 in a row. He only went the distance on his pro debut, so that's got to be the most knockouts in a row for any British fighter right now. Coming off a good win last time out against David Adelaide. You know, he's on a real good run, you know. Fraser Clark in the other corner, vastly experienced amateur. Did he turn over a bit too late? 32 years of age. Coming off a win last time against Dave Allen, of course. But the time before that, he looked awful against Marius Wack at York Hall, despite winning every round. I just think Fabio Wardley is going to be too explosive, too quick. And those are the two things I think is going to work in his favour the most. I just think he, like I say, he's explosive, he's quick with his hands. And I just think he's going to be able to get to big phrase. I think you know, big phrase is experienced enough where I feel like he'll be able to weather a few storms and stuff like that. Even if he does get caught, I think he'll know what to do in those moments. But I just think Fabio Wardley's going to just have a little bit too much. I think he's, you know, he's got a lot of momentum. There's going to be too big a spring in his step. And I think for me, he will emerge victorious. If I had to say, then I'd of course have to say by stoppage, but I think he'll win the fight. And now moving to the final fight to mention, it goes down next Wednesday, April the 3rd at the 36ers Arena in Adelaide, South Australia. Over here, friend of the show, Jermell Herrin, making a trip to Australia. He's 24-4. It's another fight on his comeback trail. He gets in with Jackson John England. That's over 10 rounds there at super featherweight. Jackson John England, 15-3. We've seen him around the scene. You know, he's boxed a few guys. Never been stopped, though. That has to be said in his three losses. But, yeah, been in there with the likes of Liam Wilson. Been in there with the likes of Nathaniel May, Paul Fleming, and a couple of other guys. All the best to Jermell Herrin down under. But yeah, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news. Then we did the preview part just there. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 441 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated WBO number one ranked contender, Mr. Albert Bell. Always great to have him on the show. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. There has been two pieces of news break whilst we've been recording the show. We're going to see Juan Francisco Estrada defending his WBC and Ring Magazine World Super Flyweight titles against Jesse Bam Rodriguez. That one to go down in Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday, June the 29th. It's going to be live on DAZN. What a crazy fight that's going to be. Cannot wait for it. Also, in other news, Christian Mbili steps in the ring with the UK's Mark Heffron. That one to go down at super middleweight. And also the return of Arslanbek Makhmudov. He steps in the ring with Junior Farr, which could be quite interesting. That one for May the 25th in Canada. That's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends. Remember to visit www.manscaped.com and use that promo code BOXHARD for 20% off plus free shipping. Enjoy your weekends. Like I say, stay safe and we'll see you all again same time next week.